Episode 1524, My Strength is My Story with Christy Purifoy, Placemaker.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive.
Happy, happy day. It is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us Dr. Christy Purifoy. I'm telling you, she is going to warm your heart. Now, our discussion is a little bit different, but I promise you, you want to listen all the way to the end because it is so beautiful. You're going to be captivated. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Christy's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already even had the opportunity, you want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy, Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, I was truly blessed by our time together, and I know you will be too. She has the sweetest, warmest heart. And if you're feeling like you're kind of stuck in a label, you've got to listen to this because in her brand new book, Placemaker, she changes and turns the tables. It's fascinating, it's captivating, and I promise you that you will see a seed of peace and beauty throughout the entire conversation and how she intertwines everything together in the life that we live and how she builds her foundation. Get ready to grow joy and peace. So without further ado, let's welcome in Dr. Christy Purifoy, Placemaker. Welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited. We have a doctor in the house. And guess what that means? You know what? I probably should have read a lot more in high school, but I didn't. Christy Purifoy is a wife of 22 years and a mother to their four children. She earned her PhD in English literature, see what I mean, at the University of Chicago before trading the classroom for an old farmhouse, a garden, and a writing desk. Christy is the co-host of the podcast Out of the Ordinary with Lisa Jo Baker. She is also the author of two books, Roots and Sky, A Journey Home in Four Seasons, and her brand new book, Placemaker, Cultivating Places of Comfort, Beauty, and Peace. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. How are you?
Oh, I am well. What a lovely introduction. You know, I tell my kids I'm a doctor of old books, and they are not impressed at all. Which I think is just right.
It is. And when I was reading your bio, I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot tell her that I did not like reading those old books when I was growing up. I have a little more respect for them now, but honestly, sure. I really still don't like to read them.
Hey, my kids have already burst that bubble many, many times, so you are safe with me.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I feel okay about it, but if you don't mind, I'm going to call you Christy. Is that all right? Instead of we could call you Dr. Christy.
Oh, please, Christy. No one calls me doctor except every year. It's so sweet. My mother-in-law sends me a birthday card, and she always writes Dr. Purifoy on the envelope. Which I just love because I'm not teaching any longer. And so no one in my life calls me that. But I love that she remembers and honors that. It's the sweetest thing. But nope, I go by Christy.
Well, and you worked really hard for it. I have worked with a lot of PhD candidates and got them from when they started to when they ended. And it is a crazy ride to get through that. So you've earned it, Miss Christy.
Thanks so much.
Or wait, Dr. Christy, we got to get this right.
There you go.
Oh, well, I have to ask you, what brings you joy?
Flowers, my garden. Oh, it's easy. It's easy. It's absolutely the easiest thing to answer. It brings me so much joy. Yeah. It's like I'm growing joy.
That's an awesome way to think of it.
And even in winter, so right now, if you hear any pitter patter in the background, my kids are home because we're having a snow day here in Pennsylvania. But even this morning, I walked around in the snow, and of course, the garden is all covered. It's like this, this blanket of snow over it. And what was I doing? I was walking around looking for spots where I can stick more rose bushes in the spring. So even in winter, I'm thinking about flowers.
Well, for a woman who loves roses, when is the best time to plant your roses?
Oh, good question. Well, it depends on where you live. So for me, I like to plant bare root roses, and I do that in early spring before anything is really growing. So March, usually around here, maybe April. But you're in a warmer place, so it's possible that you might actually prefer to put potted roses in at the end of summer and early fall, because with that longer warmth you have in fall, there's probably time for those roses to sink in and grow their roots before winter. And it's all about the roots. It's all about the roots.
It's all about the roots. And we're going to dig deep in the roots today, because your book is absolutely extraordinary. This book is incredible. You know, I just love the texture of the words. It's invigorating to the brain. You know how you read some things and you can read five sentences and you're like, okay, yeah, that's okay. You read five sentences and you went like to another place in time. It was awesome as I read your book. And now I see why you have a PhD. Just saying.
Oh, I love it. I feel like my head is stuffed full of all kinds of inspiration from books I've read and things I just witness out in the world. And it really was important to me to weave that into the stories, the personal stories I was telling, because I know that my life on its own, it's ordinary. It's not necessarily book worthy, right? It's just an ordinary woman's life. But there's all this stuff that inspires me. And I thought if I could weave that in with my own stories, make it personal, but share so much more than just my own personal stories, that maybe that would be the inspiration people needed to be persuaded and to take up this placemaking life that I talk about in the book.
Well, speaking of placemaking, define for us what a placemaker is. I think that's important we figure that out.
Yeah, that's a great place to start. You know, I was searching for a word for a long time, and I was bumping up against other words that just weren't spacious enough. I needed a word with more room in it. And so, you know, a word that we maybe is similar that we often hear is homemaker. But of course, that word we tend to use for more specific or more narrow things. We tend to apply it just to women, or maybe just to women who are mostly at home or work from home. And that word didn't always apply to me. And I also felt like what I was engaged in at home was work that my husband is also a part of. And so I just kept searching for some word that would sort of tie all the pieces of my life together. The gardening, the homemaking, the cooking, the hospitality, all, even the writing I do, where I love to write about places and landscapes and beauty. So all of it. And then finally, it was a couple of years ago, the word placemaker, at this point, I can't even tell you where it came from. But as soon as I landed on it, I knew that's the word that captures all of it. And when I found that word, it wasn't only that I found a sort of explanation for my life, but I felt like I had been given a glimpse into God's own character, and maybe an aspect of his character that, and his personality and his being, that I hadn't fully appreciated before. So when I say that we are all placemakers, I feel confident saying that, because we're made in the image of a placemaking God, a God who loves places, tends them, has places that are special to him. And that's all a part of placemaking. So what is placemaking, and who are the placemakers? I say that they are the ones who are willing to sink their roots. Here's that word again, sink their roots deep into a place, to love it, to take care of it, to change it for the better. But even while they're tending it and cultivating it, they're letting that place affect them and change them and make an impact on them. And so I think we're all placemakers, whether we live in one house for most of our life, or whether we move and we move and we move. And one thing I really try to tell stories that encourage people, that even if you're just going to be in a place for 6 months, or, you know, maybe you don't know how long you'll be there, but you know at some point you'll be moving on, I hope that that this book encourages people to be courageous, to be brave, and to let their roots sink a little bit, even though they know that they're going to have to pull up those roots again. And that can be a painful process, but it's worth it. It's worth it.
It is a painful process. I've moved, I think this is our 28th, well, my 28th move in my lifetime.
28. You know all about it then. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you find, and I find, so I haven't moved that many times, but I've moved quite a few times as well. And I tell stories about all those places in this book. But I found that over time, I was guarding my heart against loving a place, and maybe even growing close to my neighbors or the people in that place, because I knew how hard it would be to leave, to pull up those roots. And so one thing that I think I've learned over time is it's worth it. It might hurt, but it's worth it. Love is always worth it. So I don't know if that's an experience that you know, that guarding your heart, you know, finding it a little bit harder to let the roots grow. But I think that's pretty common with that number of moves.
It is a common thing. I think for me, I'm on the flip side of the coin. And I don't know, I grew up moving. I mean, at 6 weeks old, I was already moving. And I probably came out of the womb moving even then. And so it's just one of those things that I think it depends on how you adopt it. And my children, I think I calculated our youngest has moved 11 times already in his lifetime. Wow. That's crazy for such a young little guy. I mean, yes, he's an eighth grader, but still, you know.
That's a lot of moves.
That's a lot of moves.
You become good at it, I guess.
You do.
You adapt, yeah.
And you have the moving company on speed dial.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think that people who've moved around a lot too and have lived in a number of different places, they have a special way of seeing places because, of course, they're seeing the place, but it's up against this backdrop of all the other places. And I think their perspective on a place can be really valuable. They have a sort of outsider's perspective that the people who've only known that place can really benefit from. So they have a lot of wisdom, I think, to offer about how to love a place, what makes a place special, and all that sort of thing.
Beautifully put, Christy. Beautifully put. Well, your chapters are titled, which are very intriguing to me, By Trees or Forest. When did you start this love for trees? I know for me personally, you know, when I was growing up, it was my grandfather. And we lost him very early. He was 65 years old and passed away from cancer. When I was walking with him to the pond or at the park, I didn't really think much about it. I enjoyed the time. It was with grandpa. I mean, come on. Yes. But since we lost him my eighth grade year, just before my birthday, it was one of those things now, the memories I hold so dear to my heart. So when was the love for you with trees?
You know, my story is so similar because it was also a generational thing. I think of it as a legacy that's been handed down to me. My father, and the book is dedicated to him, but my father loves trees. He grew up on a farm. Even though he left the farm as an adult, he was always a gardener. He has planted trees in every place we live. But the same thing for me. I would go out with him and he couldn't help but point out trees or name them for me or describe them. And of course, as a kid, was I interested? Not really. I would have said, oh, that's just dad. But of course, what was being handed down to me, but his love for trees and his love for growing things. And that love, I realize now, was like a seed planted in me that over time, when, you know, the season was right, it grew and ripened. And now I am doing this same thing to my kids everywhere we tell them a tree. I want my kids to see the trees as well. And I hope that the readers of this book see the trees. You know, it's amazing. I think the trees, he knows them by name, the way he knows the stars by name, the way he knows us by name. And yet too many of us are wandering around, maybe just focused on our day-to-day stresses or anxieties, and we're not even seeing the trees. And yet scripture tells us over and over, right, that the trees are praising God, they are clapping their hands, they are singing for joy. And so part of me, you know, sitting down to write this book and tell these stories was really an attempt to listen to those songs of the trees, to consider what it might mean to join them, which I think their song is an invitation. Of course, this is all, you know, we're in the realm of metaphor here, but also I think we're talking about real things that are actually happening in creation out there right now. And so one thing I hope is that at some point people will close the book, step outside and listen to the trees and listen to maybe the God who would whisper to them as they enjoy the peace of, you know, the shade that a tree offers. So yeah, I'm tree crazy, actually, now that I hear myself going on and on. But it was so fun to write these chapters around the various trees that grow in all the different places I've lived. And trees are a big part of what makes each place special.
So true, because you can't have some trees up north that you can have south and vice versa. I mean, seriously, if you have a palm tree where you live, I don't think it's going to look good in the snow.
Exactly. It's so true. You know, I have a friend here who's a native of Colorado, and so he loves aspen trees. And I remember him sharing with me, I was telling him about this book and what I was writing about, and he said, oh my goodness, when I was, a few years ago when I was there, I don't know if it was a seedling he brought home or a seed, but he realized, oh, I want a bit of Colorado at my Pennsylvania home. So he's planted an aspen tree, but he told me it's not doing well. It's struggling. And of course it's not at home here. Hopefully he can keep it alive and it'll at least remind him of his old home. But it's true. Trees belong to places. Trees are rooted in ways that I think it's helpful for us to learn from.
Well, you write in your book, Christy, we often discover the right place only through trial and error, wandering and waiting, following and believing. Quite often, the right place is for a season at least, the place where everything is harder, the place where we feel least at home.
Yeah, I think, a lot of our listeners will be familiar with the idea of the wilderness and the importance of the wilderness, not only in the biblical story, but in our own spiritual seasons and our own walk with God. And I think of the wilderness as that sort of place, a place that it is the right place. You know, Jesus willingly went into the wilderness, right? Because there are gifts we can only receive in the wilderness. And yet the wilderness is a hard place. So when we talk about feeling at home or the right place or loving where we live, sometimes that is really a complex, complicated relationship. And in the places I have lived, I've experienced wilderness places, and I've experienced places that just felt like we were puzzle pieces and we fit right together, you know? But when I look back, I think about the place I grew up in. So I grew up in Texas, and it was a great place to grow up in. My father's family, their roots are there. My children love going back to visit. It's a special place. But for me, it was always a place where I did not feel that fit. I felt like the puzzle piece that wouldn't fit. And it was hard at the time. It was hard growing up with that sense of not quite belonging, not quite feeling at home in the place where I was growing up. But I realize now that I think that disconnect was there for a reason, because it certainly spurred me on. It got me searching. It got me looking. It got me at the time reading lots of books. Like, okay, let me read about other places and dream of maybe living in other places. And I know that that's the journey that my maker wanted me to take. And it began because I didn't feel at home. I think I've been searching for home for years and years, and tasting it here and there, seeing peaks of it here and there, little glimpses, but always longing for more. And I think that that longing for home, that journey we are all on to feel at home, is something that probably most of us can relate to, whether we've moved or whether we've stayed in one place all of our lives.
So beautiful. Y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Placemaker, Cultivating Places of Comfort, Beauty, and Peace. Well, speaking of beauty, trees are beautiful. And I'm going to have to send you a picture, because we've only been here a year now. And there's this tree outside our front, and I was actually standing with my son today waiting for him to board the bus. He's the little G-man, the eighth grader. And I said, my interview today is with a doctor. And I said, now, and he's really good. You would love him as a student, because aww, he's always doing work way ahead. The teachers are like, seriously, Grayson, we cannot prepare in advance for you.
That is awesome.
But we have this tree that's across the street from us. It's not our tree, but we can see it. So I feel like it's our tree.
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
And looking at that tree, it has not lost any leaves. Now, we have lots of other trees around us. Yeah. It is green. It is not an evergreen. It's not a pine. It's nothing like that. Yeah. And I'm like, what kind of tree is this? And I've watched it now since we've just made a year. We moved here just a year ago. We've now seen two seasons. We're in our second winter season. And I'm like, surely those leaves will fall off. It was just, a rare occurrence that they didn't fall. Oh no, the same leaves are there. So anyway, talking about trees and the beauty that it brings, I know for you, it has totally wrapped and encased your life with lots of stories. What role has that played in your life?
I think it has helped me just connect the dots of my life, connect the dots of all the places I've lived, because I think that's a big part of why we're here is to search out meaning in that way. So by paying attention to the trees, by paying attention to the beauty around me, it helps me see the beauty that's usually always already there in my own life, my own day-to-day, my relationships, the places I've lived. And it's, you know, maybe this, okay, so here's the English professor in me. Maybe this is another way to describe it. You know how, so you read a good book, you read a novel. It's got the characters, it's got the plot, the things that are happening to them, but it has the setting as well, right? And the setting is, you know, are they in the city or the country? Are they, you know, farmers out in the fields, or, you know, are they in a jungle somewhere? And that setting is also a really important part of the story. It shapes the story. It tells us things about the story we may not be able to get just from the characters or the plot. And I think that what I have realized is that I, too, am, in a way, a good story. My life is a good story written by a great author, my maker, our creator. And the setting is also an important part of my story. But the really exciting thing is that we are not just plopped into these places willy-nilly, but we are invited to interact with them. We're invited to participate and to join in a way. We're invited to cultivate. I think that's the important word. And so the God who creates, you know, it's like he's got his hands dirty. He invites, in the best possible way, he invites us to get our hands dirty. And one thing I've learned is that we will mess it up. We will make mistakes. We will kill plants. We will reach out to our neighbors and we'll make mistakes there. You know, we are not perfect. We will screw it up. We'll plant an aspen tree in Pennsylvania and we'll watch it droop, right? We will do these things. And yet always we will learn. We will still be nourished by the place. And I think I just want to encourage people to try, to and also to recognize that even something as simple as weeding their flower beds that can just feel like a pretty mindless chore is in a small way participating in this larger creative thing that is always happening around us, right? I mean, the world wasn't just created and then it's done. It's sort of being created and created and created with each new flower that pops up. And the thought of like being a part of that and participating in that, whether it's actually gardening or, you know, something else, I think it can look like a lot of different things. But for me, it's gardening. That's just super exciting. So, yeah, I guess this is me saying that the setting of our own story is important and we get to shape it and we get to be and we should recognize how it shapes us.
Oh, that is, I mean, just grab on to that beauty right there that you spoke as a professor of literature.
You're drawing it out.
It's incredible, seriously, because we walk out, we get in our car, we go to work, we go run our errands, we take the kids to soccer, to dance, we're all over the place, yet we see the same tree, but that tree is not the same in every season.
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly it. Well said.
I love it. Oh my gosh. I mean, but this is why you want to pick up your copy. I'm just saying it is. And you know, I love the color purple too. And my husband likes it too. Okay. So he's like, oh, maybe I'll read that book. I'm like, seriously, that would be great if it takes a color to get the guy to read the book.
Yeah, I really wrote it with men and women in mind. So yeah, there's a rose on the cover, but if that turns anybody off, just look past it. Cause it really is. It's for men and women.
Yes, definitely. And I would encourage people, graduation is just around the corner. And I would encourage people to pick up not only a copy for themselves, but get one for a graduate. Yeah. And sign something in there specific to whatever it is, because that graduate is going to grow. They're going to plant roots. Mm-hmm. And just the thought of the whole process that's before them, this is going to give them hope that, you know what, there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be roller coasters. You're going to go to a place that you don't feel that is home. Like, I think you were at a place for like 3 months in a little apartment.
Yep.
That didn't feel like home to you. Mm. And yet this can give them that little sprig, that little bloom of hope. I love it. Sorry, just my little plug there.
I love it.
I say it from the heart. Okay, so I got to quote you again. And part of it is because I'm in the South and I love magnolias. And so you have a chapter, you know, we're talking about the trees and all of that. It's named Saucer Magnolia. And you write in that chapter, placemaking has more to do with growing smaller and weaker than it does with control or ownership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the journey I have been on as a placemaker has been very, very humbling. I grow almost less confident of my own skills, my own knowledge, my own strength, the longer I do it. And that can be discouraging at times, but ultimately I think it's a good thing to have that humble posture towards our own places. I think, you know, we could probably look at a lot of news headlines today where we see the ill effects of people who are, you know, have such a strong sense of ownership that they, you know, they're greedy or they're voracious in ways, or they, you know, cut other people out, or they're not generous in ways that we know we want to be with our places, our homes. You know, it's almost like an infection maybe that's just too easily caught in our country, in our culture, of saying, hey, this is my boundary line and this is my fence, and I have a right to this place. And so it's been a process for me of like letting go of those rights, but accepting the responsibilities of a place. So I do have a responsibility to the place I call home, a responsibility toward it, to care for it, but I think also a responsibility to share it, a responsibility to be generous with it. And so that's, you know, so in that quote in particular is really what I mean. And the reason it's connected to the magnolias for me is that I grew up too in the South, and so I had only ever seen the Southern magnolias, which I know you have probably seen where you're living now. I'd only seen those towering evergreens with their beautiful white waxy flowers that are sort of dotted on the green leaves when they bloom. I'd only that meant magnolia to me. And so when I moved a little further north, this was still in the South, but I was living at this point in Northern Virginia. I was in Washington, D.C. one spring, and I saw for the first time a northern deciduous magnolia, which loses its leaves, of course, in winter, and then in the spring is covered all over with flowers as if a flock of pink birds or butterflies had landed all over the tree. And so it's related to that Southern magnolia, but it is a very different tree. And when I saw that beauty, I was so astonished, but I wanted to own it. I wanted one in my yard now. I wanted it to belong to me. But it was many years before I had a magnolia like that, a saucer magnolia of my own. I now have a beautiful magnolia like that in my yard. But of course, now I receive it as a gift. I didn't plant it. I didn't cause it to grow. I am just the grateful, grateful recipient. But yeah, that's a great example of something I've learned from the trees.
Well, trees have a lot to teach. And I know for you and your journey, as you've gone on in it, when did you actually begin living intentionally as a placemaker?
Yes, I think it began when I was living in the city. It began there. We lived in Chicago for 10 years. And in a way, it's unavoidable in the city because you are living so close to your neighbors. For instance, we lived in a six flat, it was called. So there were six apartments in it, and we owned them. We owned our own little unit, but we owners in our little units shared ownership of the building. So it's known as like a condominium, you know, in legal terms. So that meant that we had to share decisions about what temperature to set the boiler at for our heat, or what, you know, the wallpaper was peeling in the stairwell. So we had to decide as a group of neighbors, would we replace that with more wallpaper, or would we try paint this time? You know, how much money did we had to keep a budget together? It was not easy. It was hard work, that being a neighbor and that sort of joint ownership that we had. But I think that's where I began to see the value of it, because I was relying on other people to help me in that work. So it began in the city, but I tell you, it really has only become crystal clear here at Maplehurst. And this is that's the name of the old farmhouse where we live here in Pennsylvania. And this place, so we came with, you know, a little bit of DIY experience, a little bit of, you know, we'd taken care of that old place in Chicago. We thought, okay, maybe we can handle this. We can tackle this. And a couple years in, that's all it took for me to realize that this place was completely beyond us. And even to question, you know, I tell this story in the book as well, even to question, have we made a terrible mistake? But what I have learned here about placemaking is that we don't do it alone, that actually it's really best done in community. And what I needed here at Maplehurst was a community of people to help me. I'd had that community naturally in the city. We'd had to do it together. Although I think at the time I'd only seen that as a liability, a limitation. Oh, I would rather choose that wallpaper myself. I would rather, make all the decisions myself. Wouldn't it be better, simpler, more efficient, more beautiful if I could do it on my own? But here at Maplehurst, where I am the owner, and I only have to, run these decisions by my husband, I've learned, wow, I don't want to do it on my own. I can't. I don't have what it takes. I don't know how to fix this. I don't have expertise in plaster. There were months when we lived here where the wall in our front hall, an old plaster wall going up the stairs, every day was bulging more and more ominously as that old plaster began to fail. It was like a bubble growing on the wall, and every time I would walk past it, I would think, any day now, it's just going to collapse. The whole house will tumble around my head. But what did I need? I needed a man named Bill, who came to our rescue, who's an expert in old plaster and repairing old walls. And I needed his friendship. I needed his skill. I needed his encouragement to say, no, you haven't made a mistake. We can take care of this place together. So it began in the city, but really it's I think really come home to me here at Maplehurst that placemaking is something best done together, best done in community.
Well, tell everybody how old this house is, because it's not like it's just 10 years old.
Right. Yeah, the plaster might be a clue. It was built around 1880. So it's a Victorian house. It was built by Pennsylvania Quakers who settled the area around here where I live. It's not actually where I live. It's not really, it's an old house, but it's not really an old house here, actually, is what I want to say. So the old houses around here are all 1700s. They're made of field stones that the first farmers dug up out of their fields, and they built these old stone farmhouses. So sometimes around here when I tell people, oh, we live in an old farmhouse, they say, oh, an old, field stone house. And I have to tell them, actually, no, not that old, just 1880.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, and because you moved from Chicago to Maplehurst, correct?
We actually had a 2-year stopover in Florida. So we left Chicago. I finished graduate school. My husband's work took us down to Northern Florida. And at that point, and we bought a house in the suburbs. And we thought, okay, we've been in the city 2 years. It was a wonderful experience, but maybe it's time for some suburban living. Our kids are older. They've never had a yard. How great for them to have some grass to play on. Of course, I'd forgotten from my Texas childhood what that St. Augustine grass feels like. It's not so easy to play on. It's a little sharp on bare feet. But we had a yard for the first time, and we thought, hey, maybe this is it. Maybe we'll stay here. And I was unprepared, actually, for how hard that season in Florida was. It was a beautiful place. It is a beautiful place, but it was a very hard place for me to live. I started to miss winter, to miss snow, to miss the seasons. And but now I'm grateful for that for many reasons, one of them being that that opportunity to miss winter. I think about it now. Every time, like on a day like this where it's snowing, I'm extra grateful for this snow because I know what it was like to live without it. I know how I missed winter. And so I always say thank you, even when it's inconvenient and messy and so on. So sometimes a period of living without can really be a gift. And those Florida years were definitely a gift, though they were hard.
Amen. And sometimes, like you said, we need to have that separation in order to see the beauty that we take for granted every single day.
Exactly. And after 10 years in Chicago, I definitely was taking snow for granted.
Yes. And this winter has been a harder winter than they've seen a long time.
I admit I was actually glad not to be living there any longer when I heard about the polar vortex. That was something else. So lots of love to my Chicago friends.
Oh, exactly. Oh, well, we've got to go back though to a time when you talk about one of your moves where you attended a church, you moved there. And I think if you correct me if I'm wrong, is when you were just down there for like 3 months in this little apartment. Yes. And you started to attend a church there and host a Bible study or a group. And you started in this room at the church that was kind of like beige and drab. And you even asked permission to, hey, can we move this to our little apartment? And you were encouraged not to do so, but you did it. Right. Hospitality. I know, I read it and I was like, oh, I've so been there. But come on, come over anyway. But you say in your book, hospitality is a spiritual practice. But we also connect it more so. I mean, hospitality part is where we connect the spiritual practice part. But we leave out the placemaking. How are the two of them different?
Yes. Yeah. That's been so important for me to learn. And it's been a gift because hospitality, of course, is something I think we're all invited to be a part of. Some of us are more gifted at it than others. It comes more naturally. I've always been drawn to it, but I've struggled with it too because I'm an introvert. And so I can, you know, be easily worn out by lots of people. And of course, I already live with, you know, five other family members. So I'm kind of maxed out anyway, day to day. But the gift about placemaking and how it can intersect with hospitality for me has been to realize that when I tend a place, a garden or a home or, you know, whatever it is, a city apartment, when I tend that place, and then that the tending of it is an act of hospitality even before others enter my home. So I can be alone in my garden, weeding the flower beds, but I'm doing it with other people in mind, knowing that at some point I will share the beauty of that garden with friends, with neighbors, with others who drop in. And so it's been a gift to realize that I don't have to have people in my house all the time to be daily engaged in work that that leads to hospitality. But more than that, whether you're an introvert or extrovert, I think the overlap here, the connection between placemaking and hospitality is that we can say, oh, I want to welcome other people. I want to give them peace. I want them to experience peace in my presence. Well, one of the most important ways I think we do that is by preparing a place for those people, and by thinking ahead of time, how can I clear space in this place somehow for peace, for beauty, so that when people come into it, they sigh, they kind of let their burdens down, they relax. And I know a lot of us, we're already thinking about this. We're already thinking, hey, I've invited friends over for dinner. What would help them to feel welcome in this place? And it's not just about making it spick and span. It's not just about rushing around hiding the dirty laundry. Sometimes letting everything hang out is actually the best kind of welcome, because then people realize, hey, I can relax in your home. You know, I don't have to worry about spilling or, you know, dropping some crumbs. So it's going to look, but then sometimes it does look like making an effort by cleaning up, by showing people that, hey, we've gone to some trouble for them and it's a gift. So it, you know, there's no formula, I guess is what I'm saying. It's really a matter of practice and discernment and trial and error. And, you know, for me, it's been a lifelong practice of just figuring out what works, what doesn't, what works for my family in one season won't work for my family in another season. I'll just let this cat out of the bag. There's no formula in the book. There's no one size fits all, just stories of, you know, trial and error. I do encourage people to think about hospitality in terms of even the preparation of the places. And I think that applies not only to our homes, but our churches. You know, how can we tend our church buildings or our church grounds well, so that others feel that sense of welcome? I think there's all kinds of things we could do. Maybe it's art, or, you know, traditionally, of course, it was stained glass and different things. Maybe it's art, or maybe it's a community garden at the church. I know there's a church here locally that has a great big thriving community garden on their property. It could be all kinds of things, but it's not just about our homes, but it maybe is our churches. It's maybe our neighborhood school. Maybe you're a volunteer at your kid's school and you can tend that place, or encourage a community to tend that place with hospitality in mind. So placemaking is such a big word, right? It's so spacious. There's all kinds of stuff that I think you can explore inside of it.
Well, and two, when reading your book, it's also tending to your heart and realizing, you know, that we can do all this stuff that is honestly kind of by rote, right? We go and we take the kids to school. That's just normal. We get up at a certain time, we brush our teeth, we go to the bathroom. We don't think about that. We fix dinner. We're in this kind of habitual routine. But within that habitual routine, you can find the beauty and you can cultivate without having this extreme like, oh my gosh, I have to live up to some standard.
Yes.
The standard is God's beauty, his creation. And so nothing is wrong because he sees you through Jesus's eyes. So
exactly.
You're perfectly imperfect here on earth, but he sees you as perfection. So tending that heart, I don't know. I kind of went a little deep. Sorry, Professor.
I love it. You are so exactly right. And that welcome he extends to us is a welcome I think we should extend to ourselves, and then also to our immediate family, and then to everyone else. That same just loving welcome. Yeah.
Well, and you think about too, you mentioned the mom. And you spoke a few moments ago early on about the homemaker and how, you know, trying to find that word is spacious. And I love placemaker. Mm-hmm. A lot of homemakers, they say it. They don't want to call themselves a homemaker. I know for me, I'm the CEO of the family. That's what I say.
Yeah.
I'm the CEO of the family. It sounds so much, you know, like I've got power.
Yeah.
We kind of relish in labels. Yeah. And we try to find our purpose through labels. And I think when we take ourselves and take a step back and say, God labels you as his own child, and it gives you a place to call your own. And you don't have to live up to anything, because what you do as a quote unquote homemaker every single day, there's a place for that. And it's greater than what you may see right now, right in front of you.
Oh, it's so true. We are called beloved. That's our name, and nothing we can do can change that. And I hope too. I think the thing I love about placemaking is that it's so ordinary. I mean, sometimes it's extraordinary. Sometimes it's extravagant. But for most of us, most of the time, it's incredibly ordinary. And a lot of it is doing, as you point out, the things that we already do day to day, our ordinary routines, the dinner we make for our family, it's setting the table, sweeping the floor one more time. It's these very ordinary things. And I hope, I don't know, what I try but often fail, but then try again to do is to see it the way that maybe God sees it. It's not ordinary at all, but a daily gift, a daily opportunity, a daily invitation to care for one another and to care for what we've been given. So it's not about getting, you know, placemaking is not about trading up for bigger and better, getting that, you know, those new kitchen counters we dream of, or, you know, it might at times look like that if things need real repair or you know, real improvement. But for the most part, it's seeing what we have with eyes of love and taking good care of it, and maybe not actually changing our daily routines at all, but just seeing them for what they are. Just as you say, we see ourselves for who we are, which is, you know, beloved children of God who's created all this beauty for us, and just that we get to just sit and receive it and enjoy it is pretty incredible.
It is incredible. And seeing and kind of making that connection back to the trees, the roots, placemaking is your foundation. It's
yes.
building that foundation. It's the rooting system of your family as to who you are and how you're structuring, where you're going to bury that little acorn. Is it going to grow up to be a huge oak tree, or will it fail and it'll take three more acorns to grow that oak tree?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. That's a great word to think about in this context, in this conversation, foundation. What is our foundation? And it reminds me too of the scripture, you know, scriptures that are telling us like we should long to be like trees planted by water. And so as I think about my own homemaking, my own placemaking, I want it always to be a part of that image, which to me, you know, it's going to speak to each of us a little bit differently. But when I think of that tree planted by water, I just think of what that tree offers. I think of how that tree is rooted and is letting itself be nourished, you know, by that living water. I mean, there's so much that is inherent in that image of a tree planted by water. But yeah, let's live like trees planted by water. I think that's what God is inviting us to do. And what a good life. What an easy life, right? You know, there's not a lot of hustle. There's not a lot of hurry. And yet that tree is a home to all those creatures, those birds and insects and the people who, you know, picnic in the shade. It's a really rich image for me, that tree.
It's a beautiful image. Well, I know you've had lots of ups and downs in your life, your journey. You faced a lot of them. What was a pivotal moment for you in how God spoke to you through his creation?
Yeah. Well, you know, since we've been talking about the book, near example for me is planting my flower garden here at Maplehurst, and in that process having a lot of doubts and a lot of questions about, was this wasteful? Was this extravagant? Because, you know, flowers cost money and you can't eat them usually. A few of them you can sprinkle on salads, but, you know, they're not like growing carrots. They're not like growing, you know, tomatoes and potatoes. So I had a lot of self-doubt. Like, why this desire to plant a flower garden? Is this just self-indulgent, really? And then I relate the story in Placemaker about, you know, a hard season we went through where my dear sister, Kelly, lost her husband, Sean, and they were parents of four young kids. And, you know, so I tell some of that story in the book. But one of the really neat things that happened is that almost immediately, just a couple months after Sean's death and his funeral, my sister came with her kids to stay here with us at Maplehurst for a full month, and it was June, and it was just beautiful. And the garden at that point, it was the first June where it was really established, and the roses in the garden were really just blooming their heads off. It was perfect timing. And what did we do that month? My memories of it now are all about the garden. We sat in the garden. We took pictures of the flowers. We cut the flowers and we brought them in. We had dinner out at the picnic table next to the garden. My nieces helped me weed the garden. They helped me pick weeds and then we'd go feed them to the chickens. That month of when we needed rest and we needed comfort and we just needed to be reminded of God's goodness and his provision, the flower garden did that for us that month. So I still have my moments where I think, is this worth it? Is this, you know, should I be spending this money differently or spending this time differently? But when I remember that June in the garden with my sister and her kids and how God used that place to heal us, really, and to impart his peace to us, when I remember that, then I know that it isn't wasted. And I know that God, in making me a gardener, allowed me to participate in the work he wanted to do, which was a healing work and which was a restorative work and a very loving work. He allowed me to be a part of it in planting this garden. So again, it's not going to be a garden for everyone. But if you are desiring more beauty in your life, if you are hungry for places of peace, or maybe it's just a little corner of a room with a nice chair and a table where, you know, you or your guests can sit and read. It can be big or it can be small, but if you feel that desire and you're thinking, oh, that's not practical, that's, you know, don't focus on what really matters, I don't know, maybe listen to that voice, maybe say yes to that invitation, because you might be surprised at about the why of it and the what for, as I really was with my garden that summer.
Well, I bet it's a beautiful garden, and I would encourage people to also listen to the podcast, because if you want more on the story of Kelly and Sean, I know the most recent episode that you all did, you and Lisa Jo, I'm not going to give any of it away. I'm just saying you need to go listen to it, and I will reference it in the show notes. It is beautiful. It's heartwarming. And honestly, it's the stories that give us life, even though sometimes the story of life isn't life, it's taken away from us.
That's right.
I just pray that you all will pick up a copy of Placemaker, Cultivating Places of Comfort, Beauty, and Peace. We all need that respite in our life. We need that restoration, the rejuvenation. I can hear right now people grumbling, and they're going, I cannot have a garden. I have no green thumbs. Mine are as white as they can be. I don't know what to do. Are we all gardeners, or, I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I do say in the book, I say we are all gardeners. But of course, you know, well, on the one hand, I hope the book does encourage even those who are convinced that they have black thumbs to try, you know, to give it another chance. When I say that we are all gardeners, I don't mean that we are all out there planting roses or growing tomatoes. But what I mean is that we have all been given a bit of earth. I don't know if any of our listeners have read what was my favorite book as a kid, The Secret Garden. And Mary is the little girl in the garden. And at some point she wakes up to the wonder of a garden and she asks for a bit of earth of her own. Well, I think we have all been given in some sense a bit of earth. Maybe it's not actual dirt, but maybe it's a relationship, maybe it's a profession or a job or a role. Maybe, I think quite often it is actually the place, the ground where, you know, where we're planted, and the people who share that place with us, that space with us. We've all been given something to tend, something to nurture, something that requires our care. And it looks a lot like standing with a watering can or noticing when, you know, where I try to notice when my pots are thirsty. Maybe you're noticing, hey, these people around me are thirsty. This place where I'm living is thirsty. How can I with you know, the spirit of God in me, how can I meet that need? How can I bring that watering can of water? So I do mean it in the sense that we are all called to create, to tend, to cultivate. And I hope my story of actual gardening encourages people to really think about, what does that look like in my own life? If it doesn't look like tomatoes, if it doesn't look like even houseplants, which I think for a lot of us it won't, and that's fine. But what does it look like? Because I think there's something in everyone's life that looks a lot like gardening. And so I'll even go on a little bit farther and say, I feel even emboldened to say that because I think one of the most important pictures or names were given for Jesus Christ, is as gardener. So of course, Adam and Eve were first given a garden and asked, invited to tend it, and they failed. They made some really terrible mistakes, and so they failed in that role as gardener and caretaker to that garden. But then where do we see Jesus right after his resurrection? He's in that garden and he's mistaken for the gardener. And I think that mistake is actually quite telling, because now Jesus is the perfection of that, you know, first gardening role that was given to us. He is the perfect gardener. And in him, we're invited to be a part of that work as well. With the Spirit of Christ in us, we also are gardeners. So what does that look like? I can't answer that question, but I think it's one that needs to be asked, and I hope people will ask and really consider, what does it look like for me to be a gardener as Jesus is a perfect gardener? And who knows, maybe it does look like roses, which I think are very easy to grow. So come to me if anyone wants tips.
I love roses. Roses are absolutely beautiful. So we're in the garden now. You've placed us in the garden. If you could be any tree, what tree would you be and why?
Oh, what tree would I be? Oh, there's so many. I mean, I think first of the oak tree, the great white oak tree, because it's a home. It's a home. An oak tree is a home. An oak tree is a home for hundreds, perhaps thousands of species, and the diversity of life that makes its home in an oak tree is incredible. But I'm going to cheat a little and choose two and say I also think of a lesser known tree, one of my favorite trees. It's the Carolina Silverbell. Halesia is the formal name. And that tree dangles with these little white bell flowers in spring, and it's so delicate and so lovely. And I think of, you know, the old stories of the Greek gods, the old myths, right, where women went through terrible things and then were turned into trees. Maybe we don't want that exactly, but I can imagine being turned into a tree. That silver bell does speak to me. There's something about how delicate it is and lovely. And trees are such a gift to us in their loveliness. And so, yeah, I love the Carolina silver bell.
Well, that sounds great. And I'm going to have to go look up how to spell that actual real name of the Carolina silver bell, meaning the, you know, the biological name of it, because I don't know how to spell that. But that's awesome. Okay, so you've got your garden, you're a placemaker, and you're standing tall. You're becoming more courageous and bold in your walk. You've written your stories. You've gone ups and downs and all arounds. And now you sit here looking back on this beautiful book that you wrote, a piece of art in a garden. What do you hope that your readers will gain from this beautiful placemaker book?
Thank you. I hope peace. I hope peace. I hope they read it and feel the kind of peace that I feel in a garden. That sense of, oh no, not I've been given 20 more things I have to do. But that peace that comes where we realize, oh, it's okay. I'm loved. I'm cared for. There's a lot of great stuff happening out in the world, and I'm invited to be a part of it. But none of that is necessary in the sense of, oh, I have to do that to earn God's love. Just that peace that comes when we just receive what's been given. We receive the beauty of a garden and the peace of, you know, of the shade of a tree. So I hope peace. And then I hope just new eyes to see. New eyes to see. Some people read the book and they'll run out and they'll want to dig in a garden. But but really my hope for everyone is just that they step outside and they look around and they see the world with fresh eyes, and they see God's presence in the world with fresh eyes. God is near. God is not far. God is here with us. You know, that's the great gift of Emmanuel. God is with us. And as Christians, we look forward to the day when God will be with us in even more, you know, real and tangible ways. But God is present now. And we just need eyes to see and the quietness to really listen for his whispers. And so I hope that peace, and then those eyes to see the presence of God just out there in the natural world. Is what everyone receives who reads this book. And it's been such a privilege to write it and now to offer it to others. And I just really look forward to hearing from people and where they take it. Because I think my journey as a placemaker has been mine, but other people are going to take these ideas, this notion of being a placemaker, and probably do things with it that I haven't even imagined or anticipated. And I hope that's true. I hope people say, hey, I'm a placemaker too, and this is what it looks like. And I'll say, wow, I never even thought about that. That would just be amazing.
Any chance that it will become a Bible study?
Oh, that's a great question. I would love to be able to shape the material in that way, but nothing in the works yet. But you planted a little seed of an idea there.
Who knows? I don't know. I think it's got a strong backing to have a Bible study to go with
this.
That's good to hear. It would be an incredible walk. I've read a lot of books, but this is one that you could take it a lot of different ways and could help a lot of different people, for sure.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you, Dr. Purifoy, and I want to make sure that they know where to find you. So how do they connect with you?
Oh, absolutely. I would love that. You know, one of my favorite places to connect with people is actually on Instagram. For me, it's another way of showing hospitality and of kind of opening the door here at Maplehurst. So if any of your listeners are sort of wondering, well, what does this place look like, or what do these gardens look like, then definitely come find me on Instagram, where it's just, I'm at Christie Purifoy, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-E. And then also, you mentioned the podcast, which has been so rewarding to do with my just dear, dear friend, Lisa Jo Baker. And that's the Out of the Ordinary podcast, which they can find on iTunes or other platforms. Of course, there's my website, christiepurifoy.com, where there's all kinds of info about the book and where I blog and other things like that. And I'll just mention one more, because this is kind of a new thing for me, but I'm excited about it. I recently started blogging regularly again, twice a week on the Pathios General Christian channel. And my column is called Cultivating Glory. And so all this, you know, this thinking about placemaking and seasonal spiritual practices, that's really what I'm digging into these days on Tuesdays and Saturdays at Cultivating Glory. So, you know, all that's online. I'm pretty easy to find, but those are some great places to start, I think.
Well, we'll be sure to have all those links for you all to be, you know, you can readily click on it and grab it, because if you're working out or doing dinner, you don't want to burn yourself, nor do you want to sprain an ankle. So I'm just saying, relax, we got you covered. And I know you're going to want to connect with Christie, because she is absolutely incredible. You'll want to pick up your own copy of Placemaker, Cultivating Places of Comfort, Beauty, and Peace. Well, before I let you go, I have one final question. Mm-hmm. The series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
What has my story gifted me? Flowers. My story has gifted me, you know, the beauty of the flowers that my father grew when I was a kid, that it never occurred to me I could cultivate myself or grow myself. It was just something out there. You know, my dad knew how to do that. I didn't know how to do that. And yet this journey I've been on, living in the suburbs, living in the city, has landed me here in this place where I get to grow flowers. And it might seem like a nothing thing or an ordinary thing. And yet every time I go outside and I gather up beauty, I just think, it's how lucky am I and how good it is to be alive. And as a person who, you know, can sometimes struggle with anxiety or sadness, I think I tend to have a more, you know, melancholy personality. And those flowers are, I don't take them lightly. They are a real gift. So the story I have been on that has landed me in a place where flowers grow and I get to gather them up, share them with people, bring them in my house. Of course, it's a metaphor in some ways for everything else that's growing in my life, but I'm just going to just claim it as that literal gift, the gift of flowers.
Well, I can see that your heart is a reflection of that. Your story is beautiful, and I can't wait to see where God takes you on this incredible journey here on earth. Thank you so much, Dr. Christy Purifoy. It has been a privilege and an honor, and you know what? I hope to have you back because this was so much fun.
It was. I think we could talk forever and ever. So, yeah, another time would be such a gift. Yes, thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.